All right, our next speaker is our special guest who has traveled all the way from Coeur d'Alene, Idaho. This is Patrick Wood. I discovered Patrick Wood a year ago in September when I was attending a meeting dealing with property rights issues. And for those of you who don't know, we're in the midst of a real battle here in Sonoma County, standing up for our property rights. Well, Patrick Wood was there as well as a speaker. And when you realize, if we lose the sovereignty of our nation, we've lost our property rights that go right along with it. So we're all in this battle together. He did a wonderful, masterful job talking about something that was very unfamiliar to most of us a year ago, and that was this battle to protect our nation against the North American Union, which is this movement which is coming up trying to make the United States, Mexico, and Canada all one big union like the European Union. And later they'll move it on to have even a wider union, bringing in Central and Southern America as well, Central and South America. So I would like to tell a little bit about Patrick Wood. He is an author. He is a very brilliant man who has done a lot of research, starting with the Trilateral Commission that he has written about. And he co-authored a book with Anthony Sutton about this. And Anthony Sutton is of the Hoover Institute. He's going to be speaking about all the research that he has done. He's also going to tell you, we've learned about the father of our country, wonderful George Washington. You're going to hear about the father of the North American Union, Robert Pastor. You'll be able to compare what kind of a character this man has to the father of our nation, George Washington, and the integrity and honesty and love for our nation that he had. And you'll also be hearing about the timeline to the North American Union, what the plans are, what life would be like without the protection of our U.S. Constitution, and what life would be like if we were part of a regional government of Canada, Mexico, and the United States. So please join me in welcoming Patrick Wood.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I'd like you all to stand right where you are, if you would. Just stand. Yeah, just stand up right there. Everybody in the room needs to stand just for a second. I am Patrick Wood, by the way. I'm the founder and director of World Research Library and also the editor of the August Review. And just a couple of housekeeping things here. There's two papers on the back table back here, on this first table, the blue table. There's two papers here. One is titled The Trilateral Commission Usurping Authority, and the other is called Toward a North American Union. They're free, F-R-E-E. So you don't have to worry about them, you know, like picking your pocket over there. Those things are free, but you can look at some of the other books, too. There's another book over here I want to point your attention to, and that is the book by the recent book by Jerry Corsi, The Late Great USA. This is probably, actually this is the only book out right now, and it's an excellent book on the threat to the United States now to be merged into Canada and the United States. So if you don't have this book, and you go out of here and you think, I don't need a book, after you've heard what I have to say today, if you don't read this book, you'll have to browbeat them for as long as you know them, okay, until they do it. So in any case, I want to take you through a little exercise here. And I want you to, I know you're all good, loyal Americans. I'm speaking to the political right here. I'm speaking to the religious right and probably the far right. So, you know, I can get away with a few more things here maybe than I could with some other audiences that we might get around this area. So I want you to put your left hand, take your left hand. That's this one. And cross your fingers. Put it behind your back. Okay? Now, put your right hand over your heart. That's right. You got your fingers crossed? Now, seriously, cross your fingers or you're going to be doubly cursed by what I'm going to have you say. Okay? So here we go. This is the NAU, North American Union, Pledge of Allegiance, and there's the flag. Say hail to the, no, don't say hail to the flag, but I pledge allegiance to the flag of the North American Union, and to the oligarchy for which it stands. Three nations under humanism, divisible,
indivisible,
with servitude and justice for all. Thank you. Be seated. Now, if that doesn't get your attention, I don't know what will. But there may be a day when we have such a pledge of allegiance in our country where we will be pledging to a new flag. I belong to a couple of groups in Coeur d'Alene that start each meeting with a pledge of allegiance. I'm having trouble with it. Because the other people in these groups, they don't understand what's going on. I have a problem with that. Because you stand up and you recite the Pledge of Allegiance that we know, and you know it's not reality. I won't say it's hypocritical, but you state this and you almost just want to stay silent and cry while everybody else is speaking the Pledge of Allegiance. Because we're not one nation under God anymore. We used to be. But, as I'm going to suggest to you today, our country has been hijacked. We have enemies of the state that we never banked on 20, 25 years ago. We have people who are trying to sink us and put us under that we never saw coming 25, 30 years ago. But they're enemies of the state, and they must be treated and fought like enemies of the state that they are. I'm going to do something a little different and tell you what I'm going to speak about today. That way, when I speak about it, you'll know what target I'm trying to hit here, okay? Number one, premise number one. I'm going to suggest to you and demonstrate that the executive branch of the U.S. government was hijacked in 1976, at least by that time, by members of this group called the Trilateral Commission, upon the election of President James Earl Carter and Vice President Walter Mondale. That's premise number one. Number two, I'm going to demonstrate that the Trilateral Commission domination has continued unchallenged and unabated since that time. And number three, I'm going to suggest that the Security and Prosperity Partnership, which is part and parcel of the North American Union or North American community right now, are the exclusive policy creation of members of the Trilateral Commission. Now, some of you have heard this term, Trilateral Commission, before, and for some of you, this may, you know, kind of bring up a cloud of, well, you know, that's really kind of far out and weird, and what kind of conspiracy theory we're talking about here. I want to tell you that in my vocabulary, there is no C word. I don't use the word conspiracy. I hope you don't either. Because in this case, there is nothing hidden. Nothing I'm pulling out today for you is unavailable in the public arena. If I got it, you could get it. It's just a matter of time and knowing where to look. So there's no conspiracy with this, and we started studying the Trilateral Commission back in the late 1970s, and there was plenty of information available then, and there's even more information available now, so there is no conspiracy. So I don't want to let anybody perpetuate that thought that this is some far out, weird right-wing or weird left-wing type of a diatribe. These are facts that are going to be supported by evidence, as you will see. Now, why should we identify the enemy? Well, in the 5th century B.C., in the book by Sun Tzu called The Art of War, some of you have heard this before, Chinese, it says, if you know the enemy and know yourself, you need not fear the result of 100 battles. If you know yourself but not the enemy, for every victory gained, you will also suffer a defeat. If you know neither the enemy nor yourself, you will succumb in every battle. Now I ask you a question. We're sitting here today, actually we're not doing too bad because we had breakfast and whatever, and we got to take a shower this morning, we're doing okay. But we're bloodied, we're beaten up, we're being overrun. Virtually every position we have is being overrun by a tsunami of warriors who are dead set against us to crush us. How have we allowed ourselves to come to this point? I can tell you why. According to the Art of War, it's because we have not known the enemy and we have not known ourselves. These two things need to change if we're going to be successful in our struggle against this tyranny that's upon us. Now, let me give you a little rough history, quick history on the Trilateral Commission. It's a private organization, not government. Commission implies government, but they just use that name, I think, to confuse people. It's a private organization founded in 1973 by two men in particular. David Rockefeller was one, the international banker, and Zbigniew Brzezinski was the other, who was an academic at the time, rising star in the academic world. And at the time, 284 members were asked to join the Trilateral Commission from three areas. This is where the word tri comes from, trilateral. There was North America, that is Canada and the United States, Europe, and Japan. These three regions comprise the membership, roughly one-third, one-third, and one-third. And then there are specific marching instructions in their own literature and their own pamphlets and stuff they put out. Their specific goal was to create a new international economic order. That was their words, not mine. The NIEW, the New International Economic Order. And they set out to do this. They wrote policy papers every year, actually multiple policy papers every year, all of which, by the way, are available to the public for a price, but not a very large price, but it's available. And when they set out in 1973 to do this, they had a strategy and they had a plan. And I'm going to share that with you so that you can see what they have done and how they have done it to us. Now, the question comes up, why did they need the Trilateral Commission? It didn't just come into existence by, well, we need something else to do, let's form a new group. There was a purpose behind it. And one of the early members of the Trilateral Commission was this gentleman, Richard Gardner. And Richard Gardner was an academic as well. And he wrote in a study paper called The Hard Road to World Order, he wrote in short, the House of World Order, that's the NIEW at that time, would have to be built from the bottom up rather than from the top down. It will look like a great booming, buzzing confusion, to use William James' famous description of reality, but an end run around national sovereignty, eroding it piece by piece, will accomplish much more than the old-fashioned frontal assault. That's what he wrote. It's not what I wrote. You can check it out. It's documented in my paper where you can go find him saying that. Now, prior to 1973, there had been what they would consider several frontal assaults on the attack or on the movement towards the New World Order. And it had not happened. It had not gotten them anywhere. The Trilateral Commission specifically was put in place to become an end run around national security. Now, those of you who know football, you know what an end run is. It's where, when the enemy is not expecting it, you run in the opposite direction and run around the defenses and hopefully score a touchdown. Now, Zbigniew Brzezinski wrote a book in 1972, and remember, Brzezinski is a co-founder of the Trilateral Commission. He said in this book called Between Two Ages, he said, the nation state as a fundamental unit of man's organized life has ceased to be the principal creative force. International banks and multinational corporations are acting and planning in terms that are far in advance of the political concepts of the nation state. This is the man, the co-founder of the Trilateral Commission, obviously is on the border right then, is just on the edge of a treasonous statement, isn't he? Okay. Then, his prophecy then that he gave, I call this a prophecy. It's not a prophecy in a religious sense, but it's, not that he's not a religionist, but he said the technotronic era, that's what he called it, what we're into now, involves a gradual appearance of a more controlled society. Does that happen? Amen, right? Such a society would be dominated by an elite, unrestrained by traditional values. And by the way, we're talking about traditional values this morning. That's all I've heard so far, okay? I'm for that too, by the way. But in his mind, his prophetic statement is that this elite will rule unrestrained by traditional values. This is the enemy that we're up against, folks. Now, let me explain to you how this happened, what their plan was. When James Earl Carter came onto the political scene, this is how he got there. He ran into Nelson Rockefeller in early 1973. He ran into Nelson Rockefeller at a conference, and impressed Nelson Rockefeller, that's the brother of David Rockefeller, impressed him to the point that Nelson took Carter to Brzezinski and his brother, David, and introduced them and said, this guy has promise, you should talk to him. He was subsequently picked by Zbigniew Brzezinski personally. Brzezinski has written about this, by the way. It's not a secret. It's not hearsay. He's written about this. He was picked, tutored, and schooled by Brzezinski in everything that had to do with foreign policy. And then he's simultaneously made a member, almost a charter member, of the Trilateral Commission. And then he had a campaign that was launched, that was financed and strategized by members of the Trilateral Commission, other people in the Trilateral Commission. And of course, his campaign slogan, you should remember this, you gray-haired guys and gals, I will never lie to you. Okay, that's a great way to start, right? Now, he was elected by a landslide in 1976, right? Well, this is interesting. So what did he do after he was elected? The result was he swept no less than 30% of the membership of the Trilateral Commission into top positions in his government. 30%. You say, were there no other qualified people in America that could have taken these top cabinet positions? Of course there were. But the agenda was to hijack and capture the executive branch of the United States government, the most powerful country on the planet. So, look at a partial list here. I couldn't list them all. I didn't want to do it. But look at some of them here. Walter, these are all members of the Trilateral Commission, by the way. Walter Mondale was his vice president. He also was a member. Zbigniew Brzezinski, of course, became the National Security Advisor. Michael Blumenthal, Secretary of Treasury. Fred Bergsten, Undersecretary of the Treasury. Cyrus Vance was the Secretary of State. Harold Brown, the Secretary of Defense. James Schlesinger, the Secretary of Energy. Elliot Richardson, this is interesting, delegate to the Law of the Sea. Does anybody know what the Law of the Sea Treaty is? Do you realize it's coming up at the end of this month for a vote? And if it gets passed, if we accede to that treaty, we will be a part. Don't get me started on that. It has nothing to do with it today, but this is the next big battle. Amnesty probably was the last. This is the next big battle that America needs to get on, is Law of the Sea Treaty. Well, here they were back in 1976, signing a member of the Trilateral Commission to the United Nations to be a delegate to the Law of the Sea. Leonard Woodcock, chief envoy to China. You remember Woodcock, by the way, was a labor leader, the head of a labor union. It's interesting that he was one of the early, in fact, really the first chief envoy that was created, the position was created for him, to China, where we have lost the vast majority of jobs in this country, manufacturing jobs, and this is the man, the labor leader, supposedly, that paved the way for that. And then, of course, Andrew Young, the ambassador to the United Nations. Just a few, okay? You say, wow, how would you like to have an organization where you could get the ear of people like this and where you could handpick your own organization to be seated? Do you think you could have a lobby that would be second to none? Think of the power and the things that you could get done if you had people like this in these positions. Senator Barry Goldwater, just in case you think I'm nuts, some people suggested that, but I'm pretty hard to pin down, usually because I'm bigger than everybody else. But Senator Barry Goldwater, who is perhaps one of the last great statesmen that America has had, he wrote a book in 1979 called With No Apologies. And in that book, this statement appeared. It's documented in my paper. Again, you can go find the book in the library and look at the chapter and verse, okay? He said, the Trilateral Commission is international and is intended to be the vehicle for multinational consolidation of the commercial and banking interests by seizing control of the political government of the United States. The Trilateral Commission represents a skillful, coordinated effort to seize control and consolidate the four centers of power. Political, monetary, intellectual, and, we're not going to talk about this today, ecclesiastical. That's a whole other story. Well, Goldwater was the kind of man, this is one of the reasons he didn't get elected to the presidency, He told it like it was. He was fearless, absolutely fearless in his proclaiming of the truth. And I may say, in a lot of ways, he had some characteristics of a candidate today that's running for president, Ron Paul, whose table is represented over here, or I should say he's represented on that table over there. Ron Paul is not afraid to speak his mind either. If it's on his mind and it's right, he just speaks it out, and if you don't like it, well, that's, you know, that in the big political arena, he may get a little further than Barry Goldwater did back then, but it's going to be iffy because people don't like to hear that. Now, you say, well, how do we know that the Trilateral Commission had any influence over the years on the government of the United States? I'm going to show you a couple of things here you probably have never seen before, but I just want you to observe that the world, you know what the World Bank is? It's one of the most powerful global banking organizations that lends money to third world countries and other countries around the world for development. I'm not going to go into a big discussion on the World Bank, but it's a critical organization to globalization. And the World Bank president since 1968, here they are, there's not very many of them, there's only, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. And there they are. And there's the years that they were actually presidents of the World Bank. They're appointed, by the way, by the President of the United States. That's the tradition. The International Monetary Fund receives its president from Europe. That's the tradition there. They choose the IMF president, and our president chooses the World Bank president. Well, here's the interesting thing. Out of these seven people, six of them were members of the Trilateral Commission. Is that by accident? You see, this persists over a period of time from Robert McNamara starting in 1973, going through the present, 2007. Six out of seven, that doesn't mean, by the way, that Preston was a good guy. He was still a globalist as well. Six out of seven have been chosen from the ranks of the Trilateral Commission. Are there no other people in the world that could be president of the World Bank except members of the Trilateral Commission? See, oh, obviously no, but there's an agenda here. There's an agenda. Let's look at the U.S. trade representatives that have been also appointed by the president over the years. On the right is the president who appointed these gentlemen. And on the left are their names, and in the middle, the dates and so on, they served as USTR. Now, the USTR has been responsible for all kinds of skullduggery in America. It's been responsible, for instance, for hundreds of treaties and trade pacts and agreements and stuff that have been passed over the years. And the USTR, for instance, was instrumental in creating NAFTA, the World Trade Organization, etc. Okay? Now, how many people? There's 10. Let's see. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. How many of these do you think were members of the Trilateral Commission? That many. 8 out of 10 were members of the same organization. They have an agenda. Create a new international economic order. And by the way, George H.W. Bush, who is also a member of the same organization, said in 1991, he gave some speeches to the United Nations and some political speeches, campaign speeches, and he began to use and popularize the term New World Order versus the New International Economic Order. That it was kind of morphed into the New World Order after that time, about 1991. So here we see also that the presidents along the way that were involved in appointing these people, very consistently, Jimmy Carter, Reagan, Bush, Clinton, George Bush, W. Bush, and so on, there seems to be a pattern that transcends political parties. You must see this if you want to understand the domination that this group has had over our executive branch. Now, here's some of the presidents and vice presidents. All of these are members of the Trilateral Commission. Read the list. Carter and Mondale were the first two that arrived on the scene. George H.W. Bush came right after that. George H.W., by the way, some of you remember, was solidly bounced out of the primaries when Reagan was first elected in 81. He was bounced out of the primaries, defeated, humiliated, disgraced, had a meltdown, actually. And then at the convention, at the Republican convention that came along soon after, he was drafted in the back door as Reagan's vice president. So the influence continued. And so then you had William Jefferson Clinton, also a member of the Trilateral Commission and dedicated to the same globalist goals. Al Gore, his vice president, was also a member. And now in our current presidency, we have Richard Cheney, who is a member of the Trilateral Commission. In fact, it's interesting, the Cheney family, powerful that they are on both sides, his wife Lynn, in her own right, is also a member of the Trilateral Commission. Interesting, isn't it? Okay, I need to take you to another pattern now where we talk about treaties, agreements, and regulations. Now, the U.S. Constitution provides for the Senate to negotiate treaties with foreign countries. That's very directly stated in the Constitution. They have abdicated their responsibility by giving away authority to other entities to do the negotiation over the years. I'm not going to go into that totally, but the deal is with treaties is that treaties are to be negotiated by the Senate, and they're to require two-thirds vote of the people present in the Senate at the time that a vote is made in order to pass a treaty, in order to make a treaty with another country. That's the safeguard that the founders put into the Constitution. Now, when the subject of agreements comes up, agreements are different in that a trade agreement does not require the vote like a treaty does of two-thirds. It only is usually negotiated by the administration or somebody there, like the USTR, and it requires only one-half vote, 50% vote, of those present in the Senate at the time. Two-thirds went to one-half. Well, that's a serious degradation in the safeguard, if you will, to keep bad treaties out and keep good treaties corralled. So we've had, for instance, NAFTA, CAFTA, and FTAA, and so on. These are being presented as agreements. NAFTA ends in an A, the North American Free Trade Agreement. It's not a treaty, it's an agreement. So, the third step in this process is regulations. We have progressed or degressed from treaties, agreements, to now there's a body of action in our government that now no longer do we really need the Senate at all. Now they feel like they can just basically create and change regulations at will. And so without any congressional oversight and so on. So we see the appearance of the Security and Prosperity Partnership, for instance, that was started in 2005 by George Bush, president, and the president, the premier of Canada, and the president of Mexico. And so now the big initiative in Washington is simply to change regulations without any legal basis necessarily, but to change regulations to quote unquote harmonize them with Mexico and Canada. No checks and balance from anywhere. Now, in order to get all this done, you've heard this term before, fast track. Well, by itself you hear fast track. What does that mean? Well, TPA stands for Trade Promotion Authority. And what this means, the bottom line is, that these agreements can be negotiated by the administration and presented to the Senate for an up or down vote within 30 days. There's only like 18 hours of public debate allowed. And the Senate must vote either yea or nay, and they have 30 days to do so by law. And you say, well, why has there been such a bitter struggle over fast-track this TPA authority over the years? Let me tell you where this comes from, about the fast-track authority. This authority has raised havoc with our country because it's been a major give-up of authority of the Senate to allow the administration to do these things that the Senate was supposed to do.